Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease.
Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. I am joined by so many wonderful women today. I can't wait for them to all share their stories with you. A couple of them you've heard from before, but we are talking about all things college today, and that can be an overwhelming and also incredible experience for any student. But then you layer the complexities of mito disease, and it can make college an even more challenging experience for students. So we have three college students who are wonderful women who battle mitochondrial disease on a daily basis. And we also have Kyra Mann, who is the CEO of Mito Action. And she is going to talk about how Mito Action can be helpful to those thinking about college in their future. So we are going to start this episode with a brief introduction from each of our three students, and we are going to have Alex kick it off. So Alex, tell us a little bit about, you know, your journey as a Mito warrior and your journey as a college student as well, and what you're focusing on there.
Yes, I'm Alex Salser, and I was diagnosed with LCHAD at 1 week old. And as I moved through childhood and into adolescence, I became physically disabled. And this is relevant because all of a sudden I was physically disabled after my freshman year of high school, and I really wanted to go to college, and I really wanted to have the college experience living on campus, but I was having 24/7 caregiving. And so I worked really hard to rehab and strengthen to get to a place where I could move off to college by my senior year of high school. I ended up going to Texas Tech University, and I'm currently a senior there. I'm studying human development and family sciences with a general music minor, and I have been here for almost 3 years and will finish out a little bit early. And I have lived independently at college, and that is something that is a goal that I worked really hard for and a dream that I was not willing to let go. And I'm living out my dream of being a college student and working towards my goals, but it's not always easy. Getting to college was a little bit difficult because it's about 6 hours away from my hometown, and it was away from all of my doctors and support system. So I really worked to set up my own team at college, and they have been really great at listening and learning because they had no idea what LCHAD was or mitochondrial disease until I got there. And so educating a whole new city of medical professionals on what Mito is, it's been a great challenge to be able to navigate that in my hospitalizations, but also a great honor to be able to advocate for our rare disease. I enjoy college. I love living my best life at college. I do what I need to do every day. I think I'm considered a boring college student because I take my medications and get my 8 hours of sleep, and I'm not going crazy. But at the same time, I'm doing what I want to do, and I love being a college student and just thriving in my independence. And my independence doesn't mean not asking for help. So sometimes I get a little bit of help here and there, but I'm able to live fully and how I want to live, fulfilling my dream of college. And so I'll be graduating this summer.
Alex, thank you so much for sharing that. I am so proud of you. I mean, the idea of living independently when you once couldn't, and to be able to also graduate early. I mean, not many students can say that. There's that whole idea of, you know, having a fifth year, and you're quite the opposite. So there's so much for you to be proud of. When it comes to help, are you referring to, you know, finding a few friends? Are you referring to, you know, someone on campus in an authoritative position to help you? What do you mean by that?
So I think a lot of times I think independence is like, no, I can't ask for help ever. And so coming to college, I relearned that word and my own definition for it. And so I can ask for help, and that continue to facilitate my independence. I get assistance once a week from a friend who helps me meal and med prep for the week. And I get help with my equipment, loading into vehicles because I don't drive. And I also have accessible transportation. And of course, I have accommodations through the disability services on campus that allows me to have accessible housing and my learning accommodations as well to help manage my energy limitations.
You are quite a woman. Did you coordinate a lot of that yourself? Is the school responsible for helping with that? I would hate for someone listening to think, oh my gosh, that's a lot.
It is a lot, but I took ownership of my disease and navigating it and advocating for myself. And so setting up my accommodations was all me going through the system, seeing what is available to me, getting my physicians to write letters for those. But coordinating caregiving services and ride services, all of that is on me. Learning how to apply for even services in the city. All of that was just, I feel like adulting with the disability boot camp, coming to college in a brand new city. So it was a lot on me, but I thrive being able to do what I need to do to be my best.
You've accomplished so much. And we've actually had Alex on the podcast before to introduce her podcast that she's doing with a friend of hers. And it's such a joy to have her back on the show. So thank you, Alex, for sharing your story. I really appreciate it. Okay, up next is Natalie. Tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your journey suffering from Mito disease and where you're at with college and what you're looking to do with your life and your degree.
So I'm Natalie. I was diagnosed with mitochondrial disease at age 6 because they couldn't figure anything out for quite a while. But I have had Mito my entire life. And I honestly didn't really ever think that I would get to college. I had doctors telling me basically my entire life, like, either they didn't necessarily tell me directly, but basically the whole tone was I wasn't going to live that long to even get to college, so why even think about it? But I just kept proving them wrong, I guess. I also have a few other diagnoses that greatly impact me. I had Chiari malformation. I've also had 5 brain surgeries, so that has definitely also been a roller coaster. I haven't had anything. Everything is stable right now, which is fantastic. And yeah, at the end of high school, like, I knew that I wanted to be at college somewhere. I live in Indiana, so I was either thinking about Indiana University South Bend or Indiana University Purdue University Indianapolis, which is now changing to Indiana University Indianapolis, which is a big topic of discussion around here. And so I've also worked with vocational rehabilitation. I believe every state has a voc rehab program, and I've actually been able to get a lot of my college paid for, and including my housing also. I do have accommodations through the disability office at school for housing and for academics. And at my college, we're a bit unique in that we have a housing option that are on-campus apartments. So I actually have my own apartment, but it's through campus. And like, we have RAs and everything there too. So I basically have my own apartment. I have been able to live largely independently for the most part. My first year of college, my mom actually ended up staying with me because we couldn't find any nursing to come by. I have nursing largely for med setup, and then I also get help with laundry and just those basic things that I just don't have energy for at the end of the day. And also food. I always think about meal prepping, but does it ever happen? No. Not so much. I keep thinking it's a really great idea, but it never happens for me. So I eat out a decent amount. I am also a teaching assistant for a lab, so that's been very helpful for that because I do get paid. So I'm going to school for forensic science. So if anybody has watched NCIS, that's basically Abby. That's the forensic scientist. Though forensic science in the real world is very different than what you see on NCIS or other TV shows. But I am a 5th year. I am graduating with 4 degrees, though, in May. I'm graduating with a forensic chemistry, forensic biology, a BA in chemistry and a BA in biology. It just kept being a few more classes, so I just kept going for it. I do have scholarships also through the Honors College, so those have been helpful. In addition to voc rehab, has been incredibly helpful financially, and I highly suggest anybody looking into that in their state and getting involved. And they can really help with a lot. They can also help with transportation. But for me, like, I've been able to drive myself, which has been great. The first few years I wasn't able to, but those first few years my mom was living with me. Because also my first year, it was the fact that we couldn't find nursing, and then COVID hit, so we didn't want anyone coming in or out. So my mom just continued staying with me and would drive me to and from classes. But voc rehab also has a program, and I was able to get driver's training through them. And they look at different accommodations in a vehicle that can help you drive and help you get to that point. So, like, I have a few extra mirrors and everything because I can't turn my head because of my brain surgeries. So, but I've been able to do that, and I'm currently having a really rough time, but it's been really great.
Thank you for sharing with us. You have come so far. You have proven these doctors wrong and then ended up, you're going to be graduating with 4 degrees? I don't know anyone that did that within their undergrad program. That's incredible. You have so much to be proud of. And it seems like you've really just, like, kept your head down and persevered. So now, in terms of these services through voc rehab, do you fill things out online? Do you work with a social worker? You know, for a family that has really thought to themselves, you know, my child, college just isn't in our, you know, future. It's not part of their trajectory. What can they do to be able to get some of those services? What do you think?
Yeah, sure. So every state is a little bit different, but it is like but voc rehab is a federal program. And each state approaches it a little bit differently. So I would suggest just Googling vocational rehabilitation or just voc, V-O-C, and then rehab with your state attached to whatever, like voc rehab and then your state. And you should be able to come up with a web page that should give you more details. Again, every state is a little bit different, but for Indiana, I was able to, like, make an appointment and get involved. I had to go through, like, an application process, I believe. It's been quite a while now since I started all of this. But I met with a counselor, like a voc rehab counselor, and then that person learns about me, learns about what best can help me achieve my goals. And really, voc rehab's goal is to help people achieve their goals of employment. So if that is working at Walmart and you don't have transportation, they will set up a program and help you get transportation to get to your job. They will help pay for a bus pass. If you need accessible transportation, like for a wheelchair, like they will help figure that out. If you want to be a forensic scientist, like I want to be, they will help you get the education that you need. And that's part of why they're paying for my college. That's largely it. And they don't pay all of it because they do have maximums that they're allowed to pay, but they pay a large sum of it.
Natalie, that information is so important for families to know about. I think about the last couple decades of me and my mom, you know, battling through a lot of this. And there's so much that people don't know about. I am so impressed with, you know, your stories of getting the right information and pushing through and advocating for yourself. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And you're learning because of the mitochondrial disease, but those skills are going to help you so much in your work that someone who kind of got to skate through, they won't have developed that intense perseverance that you really do need to get through life. So I really commend you. Now, Annie, please share your story with us and kind of go through a little bit like the other two women did. Tell us about your background and your life in college and what you're hoping to do with your career.
It's great to be here. Thank you. So as mentioned, my name is Annie. I was diagnosed when I was around 3, 4, 4.5 years old. Again, similar to Natalie's story, I have had mitochondrial disease my entire life. However, the complications only started arising as a toddler, and then once they became severe enough, we went through the process of trying to get a diagnosis, which resulted in the diagnosis of Kearns-Sayre syndrome. Now, along with the Kearns-Sayre syndrome comes a plethora of all kinds of other medical issues, but that's really the primary diagnosis. Throughout my adolescence and teenage years, I never really thought too much about college. I guess it was always really something in the back of my head that I wished I could do, but it was never close enough or really achievable just due to all of my medical complications. As I reached late high school, now mind you, the pandemic hit during my sophomore year, which very much threw not only my future thoughts, also just my entire high school experience a little bit out of whack. But as I approached junior and senior year, I started thinking a little bit more about what I wanted to do after high school, what was feasible with my medical complications, and what aligned with my career wants and expectations. I remember sitting down with my guidance counselor to discuss the typical college experience activities, you know, majors, financial aid, local colleges, not local colleges, etc. And then I remember sitting down with my parents and discussing not only those components, but also the components that involved my medical issues. My college experience varies a little bit from Natalie and Alex. I do not live on campus. Fortunately, I do live in an area that has a lot of local colleges, a lot of really great local colleges. So that provided me a little bit more flexibility in what I was able to do, considering that the on-campus experience is not a possibility for myself. So I go to a fairly small school, which worked out really great for the accommodations that I needed to have. I do utilize medical answering services. It's an accessible transportation service that either provides you with the transportation, or in my case, because I live in a little bit of a more rural area, it provides financial reimbursement for the transportation that a friend or a family member would be providing you, which is how I utilize the service. I am studying business administration with a minor in pre-law. I only ended up establishing my minor a little bit later in my college experience. I'm currently a sophomore, and this is my first semester of having a minor. I wasn't entirely sure if my energy depletion was going to allow me to have a minor. I figured having just a major and all the courses that go along with that would be a little bit of a hefty load anyhow. But I figured once I kind of settled into the experience, within utilizing the accommodations that I received from my college, I was able to add on those extra few courses to take the pre-law minor.
Annie, that's awesome. It's so great that you have all these wonderful schools near you and that you're able to take advantage of school and still be able to live at home. I mean, that works. How many days a week do you go into the college campus for classes?
So that was essentially one of the biggest concerns, just considering the level of my energy depletion. I am set for 2 to 3 days a week. It very much depends on the week, just for my schedule personally. But I believe that the 2 to 3 days works a lot better than a traditional 5-day week. It gives me that little bit of leeway to have a day here and there to not only catch up on any schoolwork that I might need to, but also rest, recuperate, do any treatments or medications that I may need to do to boost my energy levels.
Thanks for sharing with us. I have these really positive feelings when I meet with people like you on the podcast. You know, you can get so down thinking about all that you can't do or things that you get left out of or things that you pull yourself away from because you know you can't. And when I sit here, you know, recording with you all, I think about how much we all can achieve and how if we really set our minds to it and advocate for ourselves, that there's a lot we can do. And I'm very motivated by being on this episode with all of you. Your stories are so wonderful, and I appreciate you sharing them with us. Now, I want to go back to Alex and ask, now that you've been at college, and the question is for all three of you, so that feels a little different for you, for the entire group. But what do you wish you might have known going into that first year of school that might help other students to have a successful experience? What advice do you think you could give?
So going into my first year of college, I had a lot of people warning me, medical professionals saying, you'll end up in the hospital. That's what they all do. And I was like, this is my plan. And they're like, you have a great plan, Alex. I'm telling you, the third day of school, I did end up in the hospital. So you can plan and plan, and your mido can have a different idea. And that's okay, because it's part of the learning experience. And something that I wish I kind of would have known ahead of time is some of the advocating that I've done for myself with accommodations. Usually if you have a disability advocate, they're really great with knowing what they can and can't do for you. And I started doing half online, half in person classes, and that was really helpful for my energy management, and something that I didn't know exactly how I would do with either all in person or just all virtual, because all virtual wasn't challenging me enough. So I was working to find that balance, and also trying to learn your margin, because I had 3 therapies a week prior to college. And I said to myself and my people, I was like, I want margin in college, because I'm going to have to be living with more life skills that I'm doing on my own. So I'm going to have more energy going towards lifing, just doing the life things. And so I need to manage my mito at the same time. But how are we going to do that with margin, knowing that I'll have more energy expenditure and higher level education and life skills? So I ended up just going to 1 PT a week, and now I'm doing it every other week. And so just learning your balance and margin, and it's okay if things don't work out quite right at first, because it kind of takes, like moving into your dorm room, it takes moving into your college experience and learning all the things that come along with it and how your body is going to respond. There are resources out there on your college campus. Get to know those. My college campus has a dietitian on campus, and so they have nutrition information for most of the food options. And so I was able to, sometimes I would eat things, I was like, why is this causing me to feel bad? And I would look it up, and they use butter, and that's a no-no for FODs. So it's something, it's going to take learning and trial and error, but use the resources as you can, advocate for yourself as you learn how your body is adjusting, and hopefully, you know, just you'll come out with a great learning experience and growth, and hopefully even a new way to look at how you manage your mito. And, you know, I love waking up every day to what's next and what's new, because I have what I have together for managing LCHAD. It's not perfect all the time, but as long as LCHAD's happy, I'm happy and doing what I need to do and living my best quality of life that I'd like to be as a college student. And hopefully that will take a lot of the things that I learned in this adulting phase to my real adulting post-college.
Thank you, Alex. Annie, what can you share?
My experience with college, my first year was a little bit rocky, I must say. And I wish that I would have known that, number one, that's okay, and that everybody's in the same boat. I went into college sort of believing that I was the only one who didn't really have things in a straight line, have my ducks in a row, so to speak. I kind of believed that everybody else did. And I wish I would have known that that wasn't the truth, that everybody's in the same boat here. Everybody is going to struggle a little bit at times. Everybody is going to be lost at times, and everybody is going to succeed at times. Similarly enough, I also landed myself in the hospital in the second week of my very first semester of college, which very much threw off my plans that I had. I very much think that advocacy is one of the number one things that is going to support you in college, in medical complications, in anything, any aspect of life, really. It voices the things that you need in a way that doesn't completely take away your independence. I think it's an incredibly important skill to have, and I think it's an incredibly important skill to utilize.
That's really good advice. I can't believe both of you were in the hospital so early on in your college life. That had to have been really defeating. Now, were professors accommodating? Annie, we'll start with you.
So fortunately, because I did choose a very small school, the professors were very accommodating. I also did reach out to them very early on in my hospital stay. So it was, again, it comes back to the advocacy. You know, it wasn't like I just didn't show up to classes for a while. It was more so that I vocalized what was going on, the severity of the situation, and that I wasn't entirely sure when I would be back to classes, but when I would be very much guaranteed to work my butt off and complete any assignments that I had missed. So I'm very thankful that I do have a school that, number one, they were accommodating when I got back, and then number two, they were accommodating while I was gone. I had several professors reach out to me, not in, hey, when are you getting back, but hey, I hope you're feeling well. How's it going? How'd your surgery go? How are the treatments going, et cetera?
That's incredible. So really, being at a small school could be a very valuable tool for some. It might not be the perfect fit always, but I can definitely see the benefits there. Now, Alex, was your experience the same with accommodating professors during that first semester?
So I do go to a really big university, and so I found a lot of accommodations there that I didn't actually find in some of the smaller schools I was looking at. And so I think it'll just depend on the school. So I mainly go through my disabilities office to kind of confirm that I've been in the hospital or the dean's office now. I go through them to sort of be like official about it. But when I go to the hospital, I've had 7 so far. 4 of them were in my first year of college. And I'll tell you, I am very driven and stubborn a little bit in my schoolwork. And so I am emailing from the ER to my professors just in terms of advocacy and letting them know what's going on. And as Annie said, the severity of the what is happening. And it is hard to explain over email, but that's why we have documentation to show quote unquote proof. But at the same time, most people are human and they understand, oh my goodness, you're in the hospital. That's crazy. And I'm like, well, it's normal for me, but thank you for saying that it's crazy for you. I also have been able to meet with my professors before the semester, which is protocol for the way that my accommodations work in my disabilities office. I have to meet with my professors so they're on the same page beforehand so that they become active. And so that's been helpful because they're able to get to know me as a student and that I'm here, but I also have these medical challenges and mobility devices, and I go to the hospital sometimes, so I give them a warning. But most of the time, I'm able to prove myself as a student in their class that I'm communicating, I'm advocating, but I'm also doing my work. I love to do my work from the hospital bed, apparently. That's not normal, but that's my normal, apparently. So I just do what I gotta do just because I'm driven to try and be successful in school. But hospitalizations are a part of my life, and I knew that going in. And I try to explain that to the best of my ability while I'm there, beforehand, afterwards, and like be willing to work and compromise to make a plan with my professors. And most of the time they're like, wow, you're actually still doing schoolwork while you're going through this. I'm like, yes, it's part of having a chronic illness, you know? And for the most part with that, they were able to see that I was willing to work with them and they were accommodating.
Thanks for going through that with us, ladies. I'm really glad that you both have had positive experiences with professors. And Natalie, too, I would love to hear from you some advice for those with mitochondrial disease thinking about venturing into the college world. What would you tell them?
I think one of my best pieces of advice would be to really look at your college schedule and craft it how it works best for you. If your brain works better in the afternoons, maybe try and get as many classes as you can in the afternoon rather than the morning. The same with vice versa. If your brain works better in the morning, maybe take more morning classes. For me, my brain works some throughout the day. Sometimes are different than others. It really just changes every day. So what I have done is for my classes, I schedule a class and then I have a break before my next class. And I very much utilize and very much need that break every time. Especially my first year of college, it was super vital for me to have that time in between every class to, one, wrap my mind around everything, but then also to just rest and take a breather and then kind of start getting ready for the next class too. I will also say that in my first few years of college, I used a power wheelchair to get around on campus. Right now, I currently don't, because I have been able to drive and then park close to the buildings and walk, but I can't walk long distances, so that's why I used a wheelchair before. And I think that was also super helpful. So definitely use mobility aids if that is helpful for you. But yeah, my biggest piece of advice would really be to be cognizant of your schedule. Not everybody's schedule can be very flexible, especially once you get to junior, senior level classes. Your classes can get very specialized. And for example, this semester and last semester, all of my classes are only offered at one time. So I kind of have to be accommodating to that, but also I go in and I know what my day is going to look like beforehand, and I make sure that I get enough sleep every night. If I don't, it does not end well. I wouldn't recommend trying it, but definitely make sure you're getting enough sleep and make sure that you're taking care of yourself at the same time, especially medically. I use a feeding pump, and if I forget to refill it, I start getting a headache because I'm then dehydrated. And then I think a few hours later, why do I have a headache? I'm like, oh, because I never refilled my pump. I should probably do that. So just that. And then also if you have like afternoon medications, or also making sure to do your night meds before you fall asleep is also helpful. But just make sure to take care of yourself medically as best you can, and be very mindful of your schedule and tailor it to what works best for you. Everybody's going to be a little bit different, and that's perfectly fine. That is completely normal. But really just find what works for you and do that.
Thanks, Natalie. I think that's really good advice. I think you all have had very different experiences, all very positive. And when it wasn't positive, you worked very hard to make it positive. And so I think for the listener, we're sharing so many different perspectives and areas of advice, and that's so beautiful. So now let's talk about social life. That's a big part of college. How has your social life been in college? Do you think it's been more traditional? Have you been able to find any other friends that maybe also have a rare disease that you could kind of relate to? Alex, we'll start with you.
So my social life, definitely not the traditional social life of a college student, especially at my school. But I'd say it's my social life. It's what I want it to be, which I think is important for everyone to recognize that you are you. It's going to be unique for you and your limitations and abilities, and that's okay. And that's, as long as you are happy with it, it doesn't have to look like anyone else's. And so for me, I'm very involved with my faith community, and my friends are very involved with helping me with my equipment to get into their cars so we can go to the snow cone place or just to like a dinner out and things like that. Sometimes my friends will make sure I have my medication that I need out and about and have refrigerated bags. And one time I forgot my refrigerated bag in my dorm room, and one of my friends just took my key and ran inside real quick because she knows what's up. You know, she got it all packed up together for me. And so I really appreciate my friends and their service to me in making sure I feel a part of the things that we're going out and doing. I can't do everything. Sometimes they just come in for dinner where I live because that's easier for me and my energy. But also being intentional about little outings and experiences and making memories there. I do live on campus, so that's been helpful to be able to be involved in the things that I pick and choose on campus to be a part of and make memories there and be a part of some organizations that have events and social events that I go to, and learning how to be social in different aspects and learn different people in different areas and walks of life. And I have not met anyone with another rare disease. My physicians are very fascinated with me on campus and will relate a little bit of what I experienced with some of what they've seen. But overall, I think my social life While not traditional, I do get my full 8 hours of sleep. I'm not staying up till midnight, 1 a.m., you know, those types of things. And sometimes I say no to things, and that's okay, because I need my rest and margin and balance to be able to keep on going and doing what I want to do. Those things have been very impactful to me, just the way that my friends helped me. I also, friends that meet me in college only know me as a disabled person, whereas some of my friends that have grown up with me, I wasn't physically disabled my whole childhood until I was a teenager. So that's been interesting to learn some social dynamics of people who meet me just when I've been disabled versus those who have known me before. But I love seeing my friends just adapt and adjust to the different phases and seasons of my life because I'm still me. And they want to hang out with me because I'm their friend. And so they make the efforts and I really appreciate them.
Now, Kyra, you've been very quiet, but I would love for you to get into the specifics on the scholarships that Mito Action offers and the services that Mito Action can provide for future college students.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Marcy. And I just have to say how incredibly proud we are of all of our scholarship recipients, especially these three who are on sharing their experience and really setting the bar high, right? Because each of you had a situation where you were told this wasn't a possibility and you wouldn't take no for an answer and you continued pushing forward. And we're just so excited to watch you guys grow and flourish and beat the odds and to continue to inspire this community. So kudos to all of you. And I hope you know how proud we are. So we launched the Matthew Hardy Camper Fund Scholarship Program in 2015. And as many of you know, the Matthew Hardy Camper Fund was established in honor of Matthew Hardy, who had mitochondrial disease. And Matthew's only dream, his biggest dream, was to go to summer camp. And we partner with the Series Fund Camps. And in order to attend those camps, you have to be 8 years old. And Matthew passed away just a few days after his eighth birthday and was never able to go to camp. So this program is in his honor, and we're wanting to give these opportunities and help our Mito kids fulfill their dreams. So it's a really important program, not only to the Hardy family, but to the entire Mito Action community. And so to date, we've granted over $200,000 in scholarships to our kiddos who are looking to pursue higher education. And applications are currently open right now. You have until the end of May to submit your application, and you can go to the Mito Action website and just search the word scholarship, and that application will pull up, and you'll have to write an essay, tell us a little bit about what your goals are, where you're looking to go to college. You'll have to verify your enrollment, and the scholarship awards are up to $2,500. So we're just really excited to be able to support our Mito kids as they're growing, and they're, as I said, they're defeating the odds and they're going to college and they're having flourishing careers and truly are changing the world.
So beside the scholarship money, if I am a parent of a future college student or a pending college student myself, could Mito Action help me get through, you know, some of these challenges in terms of finding the services that I need?
Absolutely. And so because of the experience of our scholarship students have come back and shared the resources that they've had access to help them with their college experience, we've been building that list of resources. And so we can help guide families. And I know it's a really scary time, right? Because not only it's a new chapter, your child is going off to college, but even for the parents, it's the first time they've turned 18 and they have to make the decisions for themselves. And that's a really scary time. And so, you know, with our support calls, we have other college parents we can connect you to and how they got through that. I know Alex's mom is just a wealth of wisdom and knowledge about getting through the college experience with Alex. And, you know, as Alex said, right when she got to school, she ended up in the hospital. And for the first time, she made that call on her own to head to the hospital. And she has just done an amazing job advocating for herself. But as a parent, that's a hard place to be in when you're so used to being in control of your child's care, especially when they're dealing with a rare disease, and to let them go and to turn that over to them. But our parents have done such an incredible job of empowering our kids and preparing them to get to that point. But we definitely have resources that we can share and we can guide you, and we can connect you because you're not in this alone. So we will walk with you on this journey and provide support in any way that we can, not only for the family, but for the college student as well.
I echo everything Kyra said. I truly believe no one in the Mito Action community is in it by themselves. And everyone at Mito Action is ready to help you say yes to the college decision and to really, you know, help advocate for yourself and learn how to do that. Thank you so much to everyone for being on this episode and for sharing your story. I feel so motivated when I talk to people like you. And I went to college before I had my diagnosis, and I am so inspired by the resilience you all show. Thank you so, so much for being on this episode.
Thank you, Marcy. And girls, good luck in school.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I'm so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.